presents Heart of the Matter. This is a weekly community affairs program produced by WIEL.
Let's move on now to part two of the interview.
What's this about these boys? Where do they live? You know, tell me more about that. He said, you need to put some more of the history in there. Expand that a little bit more. And I said, okay. So I love doing that in the history. But the history of the purchase is hard to find because it's just not in a book. You just can't go to one place and find it. So I had to talk to a lot of people who had lived in the purchase for a long time. And I gathered a lot of history. Lon Carter Barton is a wonderful historian in Mayfield. He's a wonderful source of information. He's just like a library himself, and he helped me enormously. I was just so fascinated with the purchase area. Just the fact that it was isolated from the state itself, from the state of Kentucky itself.
Let's talk about that, and then we'll talk about the writer's block if you ever got it. But I was really unfamiliar with the history of the purchase area. I really was. And I'm not untypical of a lot of Kentuckians. Bob and I grew up in southeastern Kentucky. This is a wonderful state. It's a diverse state, but you sort of get locked into your own region. Then you become an adult. And when I moved to Elizabethtown, I thought I was going to Bluffton, Missouri or something. I thought, I'm going all the way out to western Kentucky. Now I realize it's not really western Kentucky. That how you live in western Kentucky.
That's right.
But the purchase area is a wonderful place. But it was literally locked off from the rest of the state geographically. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you had all these rivers. What did you have? The Kentucky River, the Tennessee River, the Cumberland River, the Ohio,
the Mississippi.
So tell me about growing up in that part of the state that was sort of isolated from the rest of the state.
Well, Ron, growing up around Pilot Oak in Cuba, you stayed outside, you ran through the fields, you swim in the ponds, you'd fish in the ponds. Everything was outside, and you did things with your friends, and you wouldn't have very many people around you. The population was very sparse, and everyone trusted each other. Everyone was friendly with each other. If you needed help, you could find people who would help you do things. Now, I had to go to Detroit for 2.5 years during the war. My dad went up there, had to get a job, and that was awful. I would not want to ever have to go through that again. And we were so thankful to get back to the Pilot Oak area. But we didn't know any better, because until we had to move to Detroit during the war, we had never been outside of the purchase area.
That's what that whole song is, Detroit City. I invite everybody to listen to it again and listen to the lyrics. But the lyrics basically say, I went to Detroit City and I wrote back to the people of eastern Kentucky how wonderful things are doing up here, but the whole time I was missing and I want to go home. I want to go home. But you tell me about the isolation of the purchase area as you researched it in the 50s or earlier than that.
Well, I think it made the people very close to each other. The people seemed to cling to their old ways. They cling to traditions. Many people in the purchase today still don't care to leave it. You know, they don't care to go anywhere. They're just the purchase is like a nation unto itself. And see, there were no vehicular bridges built for over 100 years. The first vehicular bridge was built in 1929. That was Irvin S. Cobb Bridge. There was a railroad bridge. The Illinois Central built a railroad bridge across the Tennessee River, I think, sometimes in the early 1900s. And so you could ride from Louisville, you know, to Memphis on that train. But and the rivers, of course, were such great width and depth and variance in water fluctuation that the people themselves in the purchase couldn't build wagon bridges across them. So virtually there was no way to get across those rivers except by ferries. And then the roads to the ferries were, you know, not very friendly, you might say. So the people were just really put. They were just placed. And I think place has a lot to do with informing the people who live on it. And I think that the people in the Purchase have strong characters. They're hard workers. They seem to be people who place great value on home and family and church and place.
Howie, Bob pointed out something. We all read different things into the book, and this struck him in his reading of my book. By the way, she's going to give us a couple of extra books here, but I got to get these digs in with Bob whenever I can. But it seemed almost maybe a little bit hard. But once again, it's the times and it's the rural nature of Graves County and the Purchase area that some of the parents didn't go to many of the ball games, and maybe some of the parents didn't go to any of the ball games, or they went to one game, and parents of today have a hard time identifying with that. But I have sort of a rural background early in my life, and I know that's the way rural people were. They thought games were trivial. You ought to be doing something more worthwhile, like slopping the hogs or something like that.
Well, Ron, my mom never saw me play a high school basketball game, even though we were runners-up in the state as juniors, won it as a senior. I made high school All-American, and my mom never saw me play a high school basketball game. Doodle's dad only saw him play, I think it was about 3 to 4 minutes in one quarter, and then left. And Doodle's, of course, was all-state, high school All-American, great ball player. Doodles and I clinged together because we didn't have any way getting to Cuba. Cuba is like 10 miles northeast of Pile of Oak. We'd have to stay up at school and stay there, walk down to the country store, and we'd get, Doodles would drink a quart of buttermilk, and I'd drink a quart of sweet milk, and we'd eat cheese, cracker, and bologna. And that was our pregame meal. We didn't know you were supposed to have all the extras. But our parents, if we had had to have our parents to support us, we would have never played basketball. Because my dad, all I wanted to do, Ron, was play basketball. I mean, all time, even at night.
Did y'all have any other sports there?
No. Well, had baseball, but it wasn't very popular. Of course, didn't have very many kids. But my dad would say to me, you're never going to be worth a darn bouncing that blame ball. I can still hear him say that. And well, he's probably right, but I'm not suckering tobacco, you know, down in Graves County, because that was tough, too. That was one thing I really disliked, is working in the tobacco. And my mom would encourage us by showing if we did well, and people would make comments. They were very proud of us. But I still don't know why my mom never went to a basketball game to see me play.
Marianne, I'm going to ask you about what Bob asked about. Did you ever get writer's block or be tempted to crumple up the writings that you did and throw them in the fireplace?
No, I've kept my drafts, and if you come to Henderson, I'll be happy to have you visit me, and I can show you several boxes of papers. Yes, I did get discouraged lots of times, and I got discouraged. But well, when he turned down my first draft, he said I didn't have enough material, and then I sent him the second draft, and he said, "Well, you have too much material," and so I just felt sort of frustrated, and I thought, "Now, what am I going to do?" So, you know, it's really hard for any writer, isn't it, Bob, to cut? You just love everything you write, and you know how hard you work to get that little bit of information. You thought, I can't just cut that whole page out. I worked 2 weeks to get that information. So I had a hard time cutting it, but I finally did. I realized that was the only way I was going to get it done, you know. And so I did strike out a lot. A lot about the daily life, a lot about the churches. I had a lot of wonderful information about the two churches in Cuba that I wanted to include, and about some of the other people who lived in Cuba, and about the boys themselves. Of course, I still wish I could rewrite the book. I wish I could do it again.
You answered one of my questions. I was going to ask what was on the cutting room floor that you couldn't get into the book, but you answered that, Bob.
I did want to ask you to talk a little bit about some of your other projects that you have done, what your next project is, and what expectations you have for this wonderful little book.
Well, I don't have a writing project just now. I wish I did. And I like to have something to work on. I have written a biography of Margaret Mitchell. Margaret Mitchell, who wrote Gone with the Wind. Margaret Mitchell was married to a man from Maysville, Kentucky. And he was a great help to her. He was her editor while she was writing Gone with the Wind. And even after she sold the manuscript to Macmillan, Macmillan Publishers did something I thought was highly unusual. They didn't give her an in-house editor the way publishers generally do, but they knew the working relationship she had with her husband, and so they let him continue to help her get that book ready for publication. So I did that, and that took me a long time to write. I worked on that book about 7 years, and I stumbled into writing both of these books. Like, I didn't really come up with the idea on my own to write about Margaret Mitchell. That came through a library program that I did in 1985 when I had to read Gone with the Wind for the first time. And when I went to read it, I noticed the dedication page, and the book Gone with the Wind is dedicated simply to J.R.M. And I wonder, well, who is that? And why didn't she give the person's name? And why is the book dedicated that way? And when I found out that the book was dedicated to John Robert Marsh, her husband, who was born and reared here in Kentucky, well, I got real excited. I thought, there surely are some traces left of him and his famous wife here. So anyway, that's how I got the idea for writing that book, because I did indeed find some wonderful traces and was given access to family letters that had never been given to other writers. So I had something new to say in that book. And then I sort of stumbled into writing about the Cuba Cubs when a friend suggested that I look into the story. And then after I talked to Howard and Doodle and saw where they lived, and you know, I just knew that I wanted to do it.
By the way, she's from Louisiana. That's even more incredible to think somebody from Louisiana would write about Kentucky basketball.
Mary Ann, if you would, you might address when the editor was trying to question you about the structure of basketball, and we would talk about it, and he didn't understand how it was. Would you?
Why don't you tell him what you did?
you'd better address it.
I don't know how to say this, except that the editor was very concerned about my not being a sports person, and he was very concerned, and he questioned just everything I did. And he is a young person, and so he didn't really understand how the basketball rules of the 50s, the 40s and the 50s. So every time he would come with this attack sort of on what I had written, I would call Howard, and I'd say, "But Howard, he said," and then I'd say, "And Doodle, what about this? He said. And so those, Howard would set everything straight in a hurry. So I didn't have too much of a problem with explaining the basketball, I don't think, because I had such wonderful experts. And then my husband is a great sports fan, and he knows everything about basketball too. And so I could often ask him if I had a question. But Howard and the others were always just so willing to help. But the editor, I remember telling, last summer he was at my house to look at my last draft, which I had to revise again. And we sat at my kitchen table, and we went page by page and talked about what I could perhaps delete. And he told me, he said, "You know, you better have this sports right." And he pounded his fist on me, "You better have this right." He said, "These sports writers will just eat us up if we have this wrong." And he said, "You need to get somebody else to write this with you." And I said, "No, I will not get anybody else. I can do this. Just trust me." And so he said, "Okay, go ahead." So that's